right. Good morning. So I'm going to be focusing on another aspect of the environment, so the social environment or crime in the context of response to a physical activity intervention in children. And among the colleagues listed, Dr. Robert Newton was the one who led the intervention, which I'll be speaking about. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So, my area of research, like the others presenters, is also kind of policy and environment. But within this context and trying to, recognizing the fact that our kids aren't getting enough physical activity, interventions to promote youth physical activity are key components of our public health strategies. And we've accumulated a lot of cross-sectional data suggesting that less supportive neighborhood built and social environments are associated with lower levels of physical activity. And one element of this is crime and perceptions of safety. So the question that we went into this research was saying, would the same relationship hold when you looked at behavior change over the course of an intervention? So, we know some of the problems inherent with looking at some of these cross-sectional relationships. And so our hypothesis was that children living in lower crime neighborhoods would be able to respond better to a physical activity intervention than children living in higher crime neighborhoods. And although it seems, fairly, obvious, this is actually something that hasn't been considered very much in the literature. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the intervention. So it was called P-Mobile, P for parent, mobile because it was delivered in a kind of mobile website format. So it was a 12-week physical activity promotion program targeting children delivered to parents through their mobile phones. This was pilot, and you'll see it was just a small pilot sample size. And the target were insufficiently active 6 to 10-year-old children. And so, recommendations are usually, based on normative data, insufficiently active was determined to be less than 9,500 steps per day for the girls and less than 12,500 for boys. These children were randomized to either a minimal intervention group or an intensive intervention group, so an active control design. And in both groups, the children wore a pedometer each day, and the parents were given a daily step goal for the child that involved increasing their child's steps by 6,000 steps per day over the course of the intervention. Within the first month, and then maintaining that activity level throughout the remaining time. And parents in both groups were asked to monitor their child's steps daily and then enter it into a study website that was, as I mentioned, in a mobile format. The intensive intervention group were given much more feedback, behavioral strategies, and text messages about how to promote their child's physical activity. And these methods and the main outcomes have already been recently published. And so this is what the website looked like. So the parent has the ability to enter the steps. For those children in the intensive intervention group, they were given much more feedback. And again, here's an example of some of the behavioral help that was given. So the outcome of interest in this analysis was the average weekly change in daily steps over the 12-week time period. The amount of complete data was actually remarkable. So 98% of the step data was successfully recorded by the parents or the study coordinator. There are some cases where they would they had trouble with it. Maybe they would text it to the study coordinator. In some cases where the step data wasn't recorded, the study coordinator would contact the parents and get them to record it. Days of step data were excluded if the parent noted that the child didn't wear the pedometer for an undisclosed amount of time. In some cases they lost the device and they found the device. In some cases, we live in Louisiana, they had been in a pool for most of the time period, you know, in the past week. So there were, you know, the child was sick. So there were some occasions of that. But when we look at the weeks where we had at least 4 days of recorded steps, we actually had over 99% of the participant weeks of steps data available. And the main covariate of interest in this analysis was neighborhood crime objectively measured using crime risk data, which is purchasable from ESRI, which is based on universal crime report data at the census block group level. And in our sample, we dichotomized it at the sample median of 158. And we'll talk a little bit about what the crime index means with the descriptive. So I mentioned it was a pilot study, so really kind of looking at some feasibility. 27 children, equally split between low crime and high crime, you know, because we looked at the median. As I mentioned, the age of the children were 6 to 10 years, so on average about 8, 9 years old. Not a surprise that we see a higher proportion African American living in the high crime area, and this was adjusted in the model, and, you know, roughly half female sex, just randomly a higher proportion ended up in the high crime area. We did do sensitivity analyses looking at that. And baseline steps, again, was less than 9,000, so under the recommendation, so insufficiently active. Now, something that I just want to point out with the block groups and the crime, this crime index is scaled so that 100 is the kind of the national average you can consider. So when you look at the amount of variability that we had in crime in our sample, you know, it ranged from 7, which is, you know, very low, to 326, which is a level of crime at the block group level that's, you know, 3 times the national average. So considerable variability in crime level. And so you can see that even in our high crime group, it ranged from about 1.5 the national average to, well, that's a mistake. So 4.5 times the national average. So here are the main results. So when we look at intervention response, and so average change in daily number of steps between the minimal intervention and the intensive intervention, intervention did not do anything in the high crime area, but it was successful in the low crime area. And so you know, on average, children enrolled in the intensive intervention increased their steps by nearly 6,000, whereas in the low crime area, this was not a significant increase from baseline. And the interaction was actually significant at about the p.03 level. Also interestingly is that when we look at the intervention group, this is the intensive intervention group, there is a very strong correlation in the intervention response, so average change in daily number of steps with the neighborhood crime index. So on the left-hand side of the screen are those children living in the higher crime area, and the right-hand side are those living in the lower crime area. And again, a very strong correlation between intervention response and crime level. So, you know, some strengths and limitations. So, you know, we did use objective measures of both the outcomes, so steps per day and neighborhood crime. And given the small sample size, we did extensive sensitivity analyses. So, for example, we removed the most responsive child. We looked at it with, again, because we had a small sample size, you know, black females removed from the analysis and looking at the remaining three groups. We looked at, you know, just within boys, adjusted for race, and so on and so forth. And, you know, across the board, these results held up, which, I mean, I think when you're looking at small sample size, you want to feel like it's not just, you know, the issue of a few influential points. But then, of course, that is the main limitation here, that is based on a small number of children. And I think the real issue, you know, that we know is that the neighborhood environments may have also differed according to other characteristics besides crime. I can't say they differ by walkability because we're not very walkable in Baton Rouge, but there are other neighborhood environments that we'd like to explore further. But with a small sample size, that precluded control for all of those. I will say that we went into this with an a priori hypothesis about crime, so this wasn't one of these. We looked at all these characteristics, and crime was just the one that popped up. As we think about the results, what we kind of think are really kind of compelling is that we know from the literature that children who live in neighborhood environments that are less supportive of physical activity are more likely to be racial ethnic minorities from lower SES classes. And so we can kind of consider that as much as we focus on some of these cross-sectional physical activity relationships, when we think about their ability to respond to these physical activity promotion programs, if these interventions or promotion programs are actually less effective in unsupportive environments, then environmentally disadvantaged groups will experience smaller health gains and health inequalities may increase. And just to kind of lay this out a little bit more strongly, in the absence of an intervention, I think we would all agree that disparities in the physical activity environments could foster persistent health disparities, such that children who live in these more environmentally disadvantaged areas, again, are more likely to be minority and low SES. If behavioral interventions are equally effective across environments, the disparities will persist, although the overall health of both groups will increase. But, our results actually say, well, if we consider that behavioral interventions are actually not equally effective across environments, then what we'll see is that the environmentally disadvantaged groups are not able to respond as well, and that disparities in health will actually increase over time. So some important implications potentially for disparities. And so in conclusion, our results suggest that the physical activity behavior change interventions may not be as successful in less supportive environments. And failure to prioritize creating these supportive physical activity environments may continue to increase health inequities. And finally, as much as we talk about, culturally tailoring interventions and so on, I would argue that we may need to be thinking about environmentally tailoring interventions. I mean, the ideal certainly is that we have environments that are supportive across the board, but in the absence of that, we really need to think about how we can tailor these interventions to environments and make sure that they are successful in the less supportive environments. And that is it. And I guess we will save questions until the end.